Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, that's me, ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg, presented by Clear. Enroll today at clearme.com/Peter and try Clear at the busiest airports nationwide.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to another edition of the Ion Travel Podcast. The European Union announced that fully vaccinated Americans can now travel this summer to any one of its 27 member countries. This could be a game changer, and some countries have already jumped out in front. Greece is opening to U.S. vaccinated passengers this month. Then came the CDC announcement it would be lifting its conditional sail order to allow cruise ships to sail from and to U.S. ports. Another game changer. I'll talk about this first with Harry Theoharis, the tourism minister of Greece, who discusses the steps they've taken and are about to take, not just with the airlines, but with the cruise ships.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
The European Union announcement that effective immediately but with no yet set date, Americans who have been properly vaccinated will be welcomed in all 27 European Union countries this summer. That is welcome news for a lot of people, me too. Welcome news for the airlines, for the cruise lines. Welcome news for the Europeans as well, because they're hoping for reciprocity by the United States to welcome their vaccinated citizens to the United States. Joining me now, someone who beat the gun, someone who got out of the gate first. He's the Honorable Minister of Tourism for Greece, Harry Theoharis, who announced about a month ago that as of May 14th, so that's coming up, anybody who's a properly vaccinated passenger, especially an American, can come to Greece.
Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you, Peter, for having me here. Of course, we did announce that. We believe firmly that countries that have progressed further than others in the vaccination program really have to be saluted, and this progress has to be recognized somehow. So we are recognizing it by selecting a few countries that have been vaccinated to say the vaccinated citizens plus the PCR negative test citizens are allowed to travel and come to Greece.
And you realize, of course, all the Americans who studied Greece in high school have been waiting to come.
Yes, yes, of course. We're blessed, to be fair. This is a place where a lot of our thinking, our values was born, and it's always nice to go back to your roots, even if those roots are metaphorical.
Well, forgetting the metaphors, let's go back a little bit more than a year ago. If we were having this conversation in January of 2020, it would not be about a pandemic, but another problem, over tourism.
Yep.
I remember talking to your predecessor, the Minister of Tourism for Greece, Elena, who was telling me, we don't know what to do because it's getting overcrowded. So one of the solutions that they came up with then was, let's spread out the actual travel season, and which, by the way, is not a bad idea, right? October is okay to me.
But easily said.
Easily said, but not easily done.
Yes. You're right.
And, you know, here was Venice saying they didn't want to become another Barcelona, Barcelona saying they didn't want to become another Venice. I remember going to Venice and seeing the Bridge of Sighs, which turned into the Bridge of Thighs. It was like everybody with their selfies, it was like, stop this already. They were even thinking of putting turnstiles in St. Mark's Square. And I remember seeing, being in Athens and looking up, you know, at the Acropolis and seeing that line of people. It was just never ending. So that was the one of the crises you were trying to manage. Now it's not a question of managing those numbers. It's a matter of how do you get those numbers back, and at the same time, again, balancing it between the revenue needs and the public health issues.
Yes, of course. It's all about balance. I think you mentioned it already. To be fair, we did not have a similar problem like the one you mentioned in Venice or even Barcelona. So for us...
But the perception was...
Well, I'm certain, yeah. But it was more about managing the flow. So
right.
We started immediately, as soon as we had this discussion back in 2019, to create the systems, the infrastructure, and the new attractions to manage the flows, especially in Santorini, which is, if you like, the one that has the...
That was the poster child. That
right.
was the poster child for over tourism.
Yeah. Correct. And you don't want to leave that out of the equation. So let me tell you, we're trying to restart. We're trying to look at sustainability from the economic and the social side. We're trying to balance with the needs. Everything we do, everything I come up with in terms of a plan, I have to go to the committee of experts, the health experts, and we discuss it and we come up with the compromise that's required in order to find this balance with in terms of the
but
health.
But you just said a very interesting word, compromise.
Oh, yes, of course.
Because there are other countries that word is not part of their vocabulary. It's either you can go or you can't go.
Well, the word is part of your reality, whether it's part of your vocabulary or not. So either you compromise and you control part of the equation, or the compromise comes to you and reality controls all of the equation. So this is not about a choice between compromise and no compromise. You cannot not compromise because you are a politician who's trying to fulfill the needs of all the constituency, all the Greek population. Some of them work in the tourism sector.
Depending on it.
Of course. So it's important to keep this kind of balance. And also, we have to understand that tourism, at least as the way I understand it, is not a nice to have this year. It's a requirement. Tourism, we have to say that tourism is a need, is a basic human need, even if it is just for a year, because we are so stressed, we're so mentally unbalanced with all those restrictions. Our lives have changed and have been upended so thoroughly that we cannot find our way back unless we go through some kind of healing process, and tourism is part of that healing process. So I think that's important to keep in mind when we make the decisions as politicians and when we set the priorities as politicians.
Well, let's go back in the timeline, because there are a lot of countries that have waited to make a decision. There are a lot of countries that didn't really have a plan. You guys started early.
Yes, we started early. Back in January, as soon as we were ready even before, but back in January, as soon as we saw that in Europe the vaccination program started, we got the first vaccines, it was 26th of December, and the thing started rolling, we said, okay, what's the next step? What's going to happen when the vaccination process fulfills its purpose and people want to come back to normality? Then we'll be looking for the protocols. Then are we going to start discussing with the doctors? No way. So 12th of January, our Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis sent a letter to the President of the European Union, Ursula von der Leyen, asking to the establishment of a new certificate that will show the status, the health status, whether that is vaccination status or a negative test or recovery from the illness.
And what was the response?
The response was, well, lukewarm. I'm trying to put it as...
You're being nice. You're being nice.
In a political way. But we have to say that many countries did not see the logic. Unfortunately, those countries, what they did not realize is that the gravity of common sense is irresistible. You cannot escape common sense, and this was common sense. So many of those countries that were against it are now for it. They're actually actively pushing it, and I think we're at the stage where we actually need to take one step further. Now that we almost have it, and we will have it in the next few weeks operationally and legally binding instrument, which is this green pass.
Which is one that you've developed.
Yes, we developed it already, and now we just...
Digital.
Yes, we add all the countries so that we create one European umbrella so that you don't, as a US, you don't have to deal with Europe in 27 negotiations. You can deal with Europe as one entity. So now we have to establish common set of rules, because if each of those 27 countries makes a different decision for vaccinated people, for negative tests, for recovery, on the way in, on the way out, etc., etc., then we're still back to your favorite word, confusion. So we need to get away from that.
Well, you know, everybody's talking about a vaccine passport, but if you don't have a centralized set of regulations...
It's not a passport. I want to remove that word from
digital document, is that
it's
better?
It's a certificate, because we don't say that you cannot travel unless you're vaccinated. This is not discriminatory. We're saying, if you're vaccinated, these are the rules. If you have a negative test, these are the second set of rules.
Okay, so you know what? Walk me through them now. All right? I have a negative COVID-19 test. Can I come to Greece?
Yes, you can, as long as it's 72 hours before your arrival.
Even if I'm not vaccinated?
Even if you're not vaccinated.
Okay, so that's A.
A.
B is, vaccinated. I have vaccination.
Sure.
Do I need the negative test?
No, you don't need a negative test. You just need to show me the CDC card, the US CDC card showing that you are vaccinated. And 2 weeks have passed since your second dose.
So you have to come after 14 days?
After 14 days from your second dose. Otherwise, you have to do the negative test.
And that's it?
That's it. When you arrive, you may be subject for testing. A small percentage will reserve
random.
The right to do a random testing. That way, we monitor the kind of risk and incidents that we import, if you like. You will be isolated in case you're found positive with your family in a hotel, a four-star hotel, which is...
By the way, I insist on four-star hotels.
Yeah, of course.
Okay,
you
fine.
Should.
Okay,
you
fine.
Should. But we allow five-star or higher rate hotels to be able to provide this isolation in their own premises, because they might want to provide this kind of service to the customer.
I got it.
And other than that, you're free to go to follow the protocols.
And that involves the entire country.
Of course. There's no discrimination.
All the islands, everything.
There's no discrimination. The entire country is open exactly the same way like it's open for Greeks.
Now, right now, in the interest of full disclosure, you are on a lockdown situation.
Yes.
Right? So between 9 p.m. at night and 5 in the morning, you're not going anywhere.
You're right. And we have disclosed that this... all those restrictions will be gradually lifted until the 14th of May, when we open the tourism.
So that is really the target date.
Yes.
We were just getting into, before you boasted about Greece inventing about ship travel.
I humbly apologize.
No, you don't. But bottom line is, you couldn't do this in a vacuum. You had to address the cruise lines, which of course were essentially idled by the CDC no sail order. You're dealing with more than 300 ships around the world at anchor or at a dock going absolutely nowhere. And people desperate to come back to cruising, especially Mediterranean cruises. You started cruising first. You started with those bubble cruises, right?
Yes. We started it last year. It was not just us. It happened in Italy as well, and in some other countries in the rest of the world, not just Europe. We helped create the protocols, international protocols, for how this is going to work.
And what was your first port test? Was that Heraklion? Which one was it?
Heraklion and Piraeus. Those two ports were the main.
Well, Piraeus, of course.
Yes, yes.
But I mean, that's where you had to concentrate to say, if we can get it done here, we can spread it out to every port in Greece.
That's right.
What did you actually do in the port?
Well, the ports have to have coordination with the health authorities to ensure that they are doing all the drills and the exercises on how to deal with emergency situations. So some of them are able to accept a ship when they have cases reported. They isolate the ships, have to isolate them within. Then the teams have to board the ship. They have to take extra tests. And if that's confirmed, they have to remove the relevant families and isolate the families, and then hospitalize or do whatever they need to do.
All right, so they did all those drills.
That's right. This is the kind of thing that they have to do. Also, they have to change all the premises in terms of social distancing, instead of signage.
They had physical changes they had to do.
Sure, sure, of course.
But they did it.
Of course they did it. And, you know, this hotel is doing it, and all the touristic enterprises have to adjust, and the ports in that case play a crucial role. We have to do it.
And of course, if the ports aren't ready, the ships can't come in. It's as simple as that.
You're right. This is a joint effort between the cruise lines and the port authorities. It has to happen like that. And some smaller ports might be laggards and, you know, be ready later than others. But of course, the main ones you know, have the capacity, the capability to make those adjustments.
And of course, initially what you did was redo the ports in such a way that they'd be ready for the ships that would normally call there. It, ironically, because the CDC has not released the conditional sail order, a number of cruise lines have said, you know what, we're not going to sail from or to a U.S. port. We're going to reposition our assets. We are moving our assets, and many of them are coming where? They're coming to you.
Yes. Some of them are already actually on the way from Miami to Greece in order to start the new itineraries. I think this is important. The important thing is actually that you need to build confidence and an open dialogue. I heard just before our panel, Richard talking about
Richard Fain.
Yes.
Who's the chairman of Royal Caribbean.
That's right. He said the transparency, the clarity and the open dialogue with people that they did not normally have to engage, but they had to engage officials, either politicians or officials from the ports, etc., has to be there. So it's very, very important that we provide this kind of clarity so that they can make their own decisions, and that follows through, you know, in the whole organization. They are big organizations as well.
Thinking back to 2019, everybody's been saying, even if everything comes back, it won't get to 2019 levels this year. Where do you see it?
I think that's fair to say that 2019 is still far away. I'm not sure whether we're going to see it in 2023 or 24 or at the end of 22. I'm not sure. But certainly this year is going to be a recovery year. We are not out of the health woods, as it were, yet. And the supply will be much more forthcoming this year, whereas demand is still going to be, you know, wavy.
Well, given supply and demand, and given what you just said, I'm assuming the prices will be attractive this year.
They are going to be attractive. They are going to be, you know, a lot of choices for the customer. So this is a customer's market. I mean, that's for sure.
And it's sort of like not that you planned it this way, but you're baking in social distancing then.
Yes. Well, I mean, no, social distancing has to be there.
But I'm saying based on the numbers, you're not going to be crowded.
We're not going to be crowded. Last year and this year are, at least for my country, but I'm sure this is the same for every country, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see, you know, venues or places or sunsets or archaeological sites like you've never seen them before, with not huge crowds, you know, in a humane way, you know, not flowing like it's some kind of migration.
Well, having said that, there are lessons learned and lessons applied. I'm assuming you'll maybe use the year 2021, now that you're opening, as your own template for basically planning for travel and arrivals for next year as well.
Well, yes. And also, we don't forget the long-term strategic goals. What this pandemic will do is it will accelerate some of the trends that we saw in the past, and it will decelerate other trends. Now, which are, you know...
And what's your hope?
Well, my hope is that people will ask for more authenticity, because that's, if you like, the thing that we're good at. We're not good at mass, you know, offerings, copy paste experiences, etc. So we want and we welcome deep tourism, slow tourism, tourism that wants to understand the culture, tourism that wants to embed itself in the reality of the place, because we feel that we have to offer in terms of culture. We can enrich their experiences. So for me, this is the important thing.
So basically, you're hereby declaring Greece is open.
Yes, Greece is open as of mid-May.
My thanks to Minister Theo Harris. And speaking of cruise ships, just a month ago, they were fighting with the CDC, and many lines made the decision to literally move their assets out of the U.S. and U.S. ports, entirely homeporting their ships in places like the Bahamas, Bermuda, St. Martin, Iceland, Greece, and other foreign countries. And then came the CDC announcement about this summer. So what does this mean to folks who've been waiting to book a cruise? I talked with Jack Anderson, President and CEO of Crystal Cruises. Just 2 days ago, the news surfaces that the Centers for Disease Control is now essentially lifting the no sail order. It's a conditional sail order for the cruise lines operating out of the U.S. The first time in over a year that that's happened. And they've said the cruise lines will be able to sail this summer. Again, they haven't set a date. Think June 15th. That would be my guess. Everybody's scrambling now. Airlines are taking planes out of parked storage. Cruise ships are being repositioned. And of course, there's huge pent-up demand. someone who knows a little bit about that, who repositioned some of his ships, as did almost every other cruise line, in the wake of the CDC not lifting that order, is the president and CEO of Crystal Cruises, Jack Anderson. Hey, Jack.
Hey, Peter. Good to talk to you.
So I'm sure your phones are ringing off the wall now with this news. And I should tell everybody that there are some other changes in the restrictions for the CDC, but most of them you've already complied with. They're insisting that 98% of all crew members and 95% of all passengers be vaccinated. That number seems to indicate an allowance for kids under the age of 16 who might not be able to be vaccinated. But my understanding is every major U.S. cruise line has already gone beyond that and has demanded that all officers, all crew, and all passengers be vaccinated. So you're going to have 100% vaccination compliance anyway, right?
The issue of children is still an open issue. As currently, you can only get vaccines for 16-year-olds and above. There
right.
is a, because of the 95%, there is a tolerance for unvaccinated children, essentially up to 5% of your guest capacity or your right. actual guests on board.
Now, you can't just turn a light switch and say that you're going to be sailing out of Miami tomorrow or Fort Lauderdale or Los Angeles or Seattle. But I'm guessing in the last 48 hours that you've heard this news, you're moving pretty quickly.
Well, first and foremost, I have to say that the entire cruise industry is incredibly thankful and appreciative of the CDC and the intergovernment agencies that have been cooperating and meeting with us more than weekly to move us forward. There is still more work to be done in terms of detailed protocols and, of course, crewing the ships, repositioning the ships, and inviting people to join the ships. So, no, it won't be overnight, but it could be very quickly, and they've expressed a goal to work with us that will be sailing this summer.
And they've also relaxed something else. Under the original conditional sailing order, any cruise line that asked permission from the CDC would have to wait up to 60 days for that answer. They've dropped that too. They're going to give you an answer within 5 days based on your compliance. So based on where you've been for the last year plus 2 months, and based on where you are now, that's quite a difference.
It's dramatic. Like I said, there are more details to work out, and there are actually two different paths of approval. The rapid approval is based on 98% of crew and 95% of guests being vaccinated, and you're exactly correct. There's no longer a 60-day waiting period or a test cruise.
Oh, yes. You know, we remember all that, Jack. We remember all that when you were supposed to do test cruises with volunteer passengers. And I remember when Royal Caribbean put out that release saying, hey, who wants to be a volunteer? And they got 100,000 people saying, take me. Well, I'm sad to report, although I'm sure sad to report for those people.
They're leaving that option open.
Well, they may be leaving the option open, but my guess is that there are not going to be a lot of volunteer cruises out there because people want to, you know, ramp right up as much as they can within the compliance window and do revenue cruises.
Yes, yes.
So for those of you who've been waiting for that call to volunteer, you're maybe waiting for about 5 years.
There's a price tag on volunteering now.
Yeah. Yes, there is. And now what about the ships that you already announced that you were going to be repositioning to other home ports like Iceland or Greece?
Well, Iceland is our brand new ship Endeavor that is just finishing construction in Rostock, Germany. So launching the newest and most luxurious expedition ship in the world in Iceland made perfect sense. So we're scheduling 5 10-night cruises starting on July 17th, I believe, round all the way circumnavigating Iceland and crossing the Arctic Circle.
And the thing about that is
a huge response.
And the thing about that, Jack, is you happen to pick a country that's already been opened to vaccinated U.S. passengers and travelers
exactly.
as we speak. We're not even going to have to wait anymore. So the good news is for not only Crystal Cruises, but for the cruise industry as well. This actually represents a victory. Good things come to those who wait and play by the rules. And there's every reason to expect that you will see ships leaving from and returning to a number of U.S. ports starting this summer. Not all of them right away, but at least a number of them. Plus, you have the option of flying to your ship, whether it's in Bermuda, the Bahamas. I know you're also going to be in the Bahamas, and of course Iceland.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
My thanks to Jack. And then it comes down to the border. And few folks are more qualified to talk about that than Kevin McAleenan. He was the commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Then he served briefly as the acting head of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. He's now in the private sector, consulting governments and airports on what they need to do to create a seamless but secure travel experience for passengers. And of course, since he's out of government, he's now much freer to talk. My next guest is someone I've known for quite some time. I first heard of him, actually, when he was running field operations for U.S. Customs in Los Angeles. Then he came to Washington, D.C. To be in charge of all sorts of things at Customs. And what was interesting about that was that's when we first met on a subject called preclearance. And for those of you who don't know what preclearance is, it's been around since 1952, started in Canada. And you'll find it in the Bahamas. You'll find it in... you'll even find it in Abu Dhabi, which allows you to clear U.S. customs at the departing airport in the foreign country that you're leaving from without jeopardizing any kind of security protocols. And think about it. Who wants to get off an 11-hour flight to spend 2.5 hours going through customs and immigration? Nobody. And they're starting to, hopefully, as we come emerging from COVID-19, maybe do it in a number of other key airports around the world. So check that out. And, of course, Canada, Bahamas, and many other places. And then 2 years ago at the World Travel and Tourism Council Global Summit in Seville, Spain, we met up again, had a great discussion, and we said, you know what? He was then the commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Protection. And I said, let's get together when we get back in Washington and come up with a number, you know, some story ideas we'll discuss. And I blinked my eye and he became the acting Secretary of Homeland Security, which it was like, hello. So he's in the private sector, consulting airports and other jurisdictions on infrastructure and, of course, security and seamless travel. Please welcome to the show, Kevin McAleenan. Hello, sir.
Thanks, Peter. Good to be with you.
So the bottom line is it's been quite a wild week, ranging from the European Union announcement that they were going to open all 27 countries to fully vaccinated American passengers, probably by about June 15th. And then just 2 days ago, the Centers for Disease Control announcing they were going to revise their conditional sail order and now allow U.S. cruise lines to sail from U.S. ports for the first time in about 15 months or maybe even 16 months this summer. It seems to be that things are opening up, Kevin.
Yeah, I would agree. There's some important moves, especially by the European Union, to make the statement that they will allow U.S. citizens with vaccinations to travel this summer. But really, the gridlock that's been impacting the restart of international travel, even as domestic markets, especially in the United States, have been picking up more quickly, it seems to be starting to break up a bit.
And, you know, the folks that I talk to and so many of our listeners, you know, are saying to me, you know, it's great that we're going to get back to travel, but we don't want to go back to the old days. We don't want to go back to, you know, what's going on in London even right now with 4 or 5 hour lines to clear customs and border protection. I know that the TSA has already announced they're going to be hiring 6,000 new agents to handle. They see the numbers going up, so they're on top of that. But you have a unique position now, Kevin, because you did government service for so long. Now you're in the private sector applying all the stuff you learned doing all that stuff for Customs and Border Protection as well as Homeland Security. When you're advising airports now around the world as to how not to return to the past, what are you telling them?
Well, I'm telling them that their investments in technology that can enable seamless travel are going to pay off, whether it's to help in this environment of restart with still significant public health concerns from COVID-19 or beyond as they start to facilitate greater numbers of travelers and try to do it in a manner that's a little bit more organized and prevents the significant kind of queuing and gathering of large numbers of people in small spaces. So technology is a way to balance both the throughput through the airport and to provide a better passenger experience at the same time. And I think it can also enable some of the interactions with government on health certification that seems to be in a direction we're going globally as part of our travel restart future. And I think that the technology can help with that aspect as well. So a lot of things that airports can do, you know, without significant capital expense that would be required for new real estate or building structures.
Right. You mentioned the real estate because airports were never designed for the TSA prior to 9/11. And they're certainly not designed for public health issues like we've been going through for the last 15 months. I guess the question becomes, yes, we've got the technology. And you talk about the health document, but everybody seems to be working on the same document, right? You have countries like Denmark coming up with a digital document for their citizens. You have the private sector here coming up with apps. And of course, we have the old school technology of the CDC paper health card that says you've been vaccinated. Who's going to accept what and how's it going to work?
It's becoming clear that we're going to have a number of different approaches globally and even sometimes with different air carriers in different destinations. So I think we're going to have to, as travelers, navigate through that for some time and really put an onus on the traveler to be informed both about their destination and the process for going there. But I do think the development in industry to create ways to digitize and upload and secure and protect the privacy of your health information and share that with air carriers, with governments, are going to be productive, but we're not going to end up with just one global solution. We do need to move in the direction, however, of a recognized framework that makes that more straightforward.
Exactly. And one of the things that really is interesting to me is that, you know, it's biometrics. And you and I were talking about that back at U.S. Customs, what, 5 or 6 years ago?
That's right. And there's actually been a ton of progress at the U.S. border, both for biometric exit and now simplified arrival. It was refreshing returning from international travel yesterday to have facial recognition enable my global entry transaction. One touch, got my receipt, and was out of the FIS in less than 5 minutes, much different than a multi-hour wait time of the past. So there's been a lot of implementation on the technology side at the U.S. border, and carriers have been innovating with other steps in the process. Where I think we have a real opportunity is knitting together each of those steps in a travel process to make that seamless for the traveler so that they don't have to see the friction points where you're producing identification at multiple steps in a process to different authorities. That really still has a lot of room for improvement and can be streamlined. And it's an area that I'm trying to focus on in the private sector and that my company is focused on.
You know, let's talk about global entry for a second, because I'm one of those guys who believes that other than pre-clearance, global entry is the best thing since sliced bread. It really, even the old form of global entry where you came in, you put your passport in the little reader, and then it asked to read your fingerprints, and then it asked you a series of questions. And by the way, the answer to all of them is no. And then within 30 seconds, you got a receipt and off you went. These days, I've gone through systems like you have where you don't even put your passport in. It reads your eyes and asks you the questions, and in totally 30 seconds, you're gone.
It's a really efficient process now. Yeah, that's a system called the Traveler Verification System, and it's reading your actual your facial recognition and the geometric distances between parts of your face to very quickly match against protected government database to give you that quick response. It's less than a 2 second response. So that's making global entry even more streamlined. But I agree with you. The gold standard will always be pre-clearance, where you can do two country processes at the same time and then really have a seamless arrival on, at the end of the travel.
And of course, for preclearance, your concern when you were in the government and our concern as citizens is you want to know who's getting on the plane before they get on the plane.
Yeah, absolutely. It's better not only from a traveler experience perspective, but it's certainly better from a security perspective. You have the benefit of collaborating with host nation authorities before that aircraft is boarded. You can align on aviation security standards and really provide a very high security product as well as a better traveler experience.
And as a traveler now, and not as a government, government civil servant, if you will, I'm going to ask you to take off your government hat, which you did already, but put on your traveler hat and tell me, from the traveler experience, what's the one thing that makes you the angriest now in the travel process, just as a traveler?
Well, I seem to be circumspect about it because I'm working on solutions to these problems, so I don't know if I get angry about it, but there are the lack of coordination between the different authorities that you have to engage with, right? The air carrier needs to ensure that you are the person who bought the ticket and you're entitled to your boarding pass and you can drop your bag. A TSA needs to make sure that you're the ID holder that's going through the checkpoint and that you don't present a known security risk in the government databases.
You know, at every point in the travel process, Kevin, there have been changes. So, for example, when I went through TSA the other day, to clear to get on my flight to come down to Mexico, they didn't need to see my boarding pass. They just needed to see my face. And then they just scanned my passport and they never even wrote on the boarding pass. They used to write all over the boarding passes. Now they don't.
Yeah, that's an improvement for an ID check that TSA does to confirm that you're the traveler, and it's connected now on a system basis to confirm that you actually have a flight. So that's definitely eliminated an extra step in the process and made that more streamlined for TSA. And that's really, the problem we need to keep working to solve is the different interests of the authorities that you're engaging with as you go through the curb-to-gate process. If we can use one ID check and then electronically pass that through the system so that each authority doesn't have to recheck, I think that's going to be a much more efficient process for the traveler and certainly no loss of security or accuracy when you're using biometrics.
The other thing I've noticed, of course, is the folks at Clear. They were early in the game, at least in the last couple of years, in the biometrics area. And they claimed to me, and I didn't believe them, and then I tried it, that, I didn't need to carry anything in my hand other than my eyes. It was the eye reader, and you got escorted to the front of the TSA line, and you were already verified, approved, and on your way.
Yeah, that's a good example of public-private partnership to aid and streamline that process going through TSA.
And now they've expanded to sports arenas and concerts and any kind of public event. So here's my big bad question for you. Do you see down the road, as everybody's working on technology for this digital document, otherwise known as a vaccine passport, that we'll be using that much like we use a driver's license to go to the grocery store, the movie theater, the dry cleaner, not just to get on a plane?
So I don't know that we'll need to use it for all those domestic activities, but I do think the trend toward digitization of identity is absolutely going to continue and be pronounced. The use of plastic or even paper representations of your identity really are not necessary anymore with the evolution of technology and the advent of biometrics that are very quick and easy to confirm, like facial recognition, like iris. But I don't know that we're going to get to the point where you need to use those to do daily activities. If you want a more streamlined or VIP experience into the stadium and avoid lines by using biometrics, I think that'll be an offering that's more frequently available as well.
Of course, you mentioned earlier on facial recognition that, it measures the distance between, let's say, your cheek and your nose and other information that are in the database. Let's say you're on vacation for like 3 months and gain a lot of weight. Are you in trouble then?
No, the system is very accurate, even with weight gain, even in some cases wearing glasses, even with masks on. There are a number of facial features that are measured with great precision. With even commoditized cameras today. So you're okay if you gain a little weight on vacation, even if you've been at a destination for a while in this unique COVID year.
So basically, if I gain weight, I could just say I'm using it as an excuse to test the system.
You could.
Just checking. I don't know. I look for any excuse I can if I gain weight. What's on your wish list? What do you want to see happen as the numbers are now coming back and we're looking at what seems to be a pretty robust summer of travel considering the EU announcement, which will trigger other announcements in other countries, and of course the recent Centers for Disease Control announcement on the cruise lines. What's Kevin's wish list?
So I think number one, as we start to see the race between the vaccines and the virus tilt in favor of the vaccines, they're talking about a tipping point here in the United States as cases are declining. For instance, I'd like to see that collaboration between our public health authorities and governments with those that promote travel and tourism and those that implement those policies at the border and in the transportation sector. Right now, obviously, public health authorities globally have been very focused on combating the disease, and those kind of that clarity on policy and the framework necessary for restarting travel has not come out, especially between governments internationally. Individual governments are starting to state policies, but they're stepping out usually on their own as opposed to in a coordinated process. I think that's really the thing that industry needs to see from government. The technology companies are ready to implement. I think the agencies that are operationally involved in travel can implement things that are even if they're complex. But you need that clarity on the policies and the framework to move forward.
And right now, without countries talking to each other, it's just going to delay the whole process.
Yeah, I do believe we're going to have a relatively complicated period here in the interim where, again, the traveler's got to be really astute, try to learn about the requirements, especially if they're going to be visiting multiple countries on a journey.
My thanks to Kevin, to Jack Anderson, and to Minister Theo Harris of Greece. And my thanks to you for listening to this Eye on Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, and get ready, there's a lot more coming, just log on to petergreenberg.com.
Special thanks to our sponsors at Clear. Enroll in Clear at clearme.com/Peter and zip through busy airports nationwide.
If you like Eye on Travel with Peter Greenberg, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
The Hargan women seem to have it all.
From the outside looking in, we were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But as detectives would soon learn, there was a lot going on inside the Hargan household.
Ashley and I have been calling my mom and the house and Helen. Okay. No one's answering.
63-year-old Pamela Hargan gunned down in her own home. Her youngest daughter, Helen, lay dead upstairs.
Patrol, when they arrived, assumed or thought that there might have been a murder-suicide.
But for the detectives on the scene,
there were things about the scene itself that were concerning to us on day one.
Who would want to kill their mother and their little sister?
There is no boogeyman here. It is exactly who we think it is.
I'm Peter Van Sant from 48 Hours. This is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings, starting May 8th, wherever you get your podcasts.